Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. National Geographic returns to the Hot Zone Sunday, this time with Anthrax in the Zone. Executive producer Kelly Souders and Brian Peterson join me next. Our second half hour offers our second guest this week, co-starring in the Waltons' Homecoming Sunday from the CW. Hear Alpha Trivette, the new Grandpa Walton, after the bottom of the hour. Also on deck, Amazon's Fantasy Plunge, another special from General Hospital, and our classic trivia question. Four prizes in play for you. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. This just in on this pre-Thanksgiving Day 2021. Tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in our program. Great to have you with us on this pre-Thanksgiving day of 2021. Super Wednesday, 44 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. We have some wonderful guests coming away over the next hour, and we invite you to be in the conversation. It's very simple. Pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country or around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. Unfortunately, our chat room decided to take the pre-Thanksgiving day off this year, so no chat room today. However, you can still get others in on the conversation by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen, follow the instructions hidden live with you. Kelly Souders and Brian Peterson from the Hot Zone Anthrax on Nat Geo coming your way from different places after these news notes. March 2022 down is the year Amazon dives deeper into scripted fantasy and science fiction television. With The Wheel of Time getting early sizable viewership and the Lord of the Rings series in production for a debut next September, Amazon Studios chief Jennifer Salke says you can look forward to far more, in her words, fantasy genre of all kinds in view next year and beyond. Several entertainment websites suggest Amazon is near a deal to adapt Electronic Arts' role-playing video game Mass Effect as a television series. No deal, though, yet. For the second time in a week, an actor on the popular ABC daytime drama General Hospital has been dismissed over a vaccine mandate dispute. Steve Burton, playing Jason Morgan for 3 decades, used an Instagram post to disclose his departure from GH because the request for an exception to the program's mandate policy was turned down. Earlier, Ingo Redenventure was let go by GH. No, by the way, comment from ABC or General Hospital's producers. Now some quickies. Tubi, Fox's multi-channel bundle, is now playing on LG smart TV sets as of this morning. Discovery Plus will start a series of My Dream Kitchen specials December 18th. NBC's upcoming revival of Law & Order, under executive producer Dick Wolf, will have Blackish star Anthony Anderson back as Detective Kevin Bernard and bring on former NBC Hannibal star Hugh Dancy as one of the district attorneys. Possibility, by the way, of Sam Waterston coming back also in his former L&O role. And Peacock will simulcast NBC's Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade tomorrow morning, the first preparing NBC Universal's mega content venture. Earlier we told you that Telemundo will also present the Macy's Thanksgiving Day tomorrow starting at 9 a.m. Eastern Time in Spanish. That may be a first for them. And that is news notes for today. 2 years ago, National Geographic presented a scripted miniseries that turned out to be the program's highest-rated scripted program. It was The Hot Zone, dealing with the Ebola crisis and starring Julianne Margulies. Now, 2 years later, The Hot Zone is back in a new three-night miniseries that premieres this Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. This time, Anthrax is the subject, and Ridley Scott continues as one of the key executive producers. Joining us now from different places are the two executive producers and showrunner of the series. Joining us first from Los Angeles, Kelly Souders. Kelly, welcome in, and happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, thanks, Simon. Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. And from Vancouver, Washington, not far from Los Angeles, up the ways, Brian Peterson. Hello, Brian.
Hello. Thanks again.
Same here. And happy Thanksgiving again to both of you and your crew for your Hot Zone series. Kelly, you said in a story that was published in MediaVillage.com this morning that the challenge with The Hot Zone is that you are trying to make an entertaining and illuminating miniseries out of facts. Elaborate more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that this is probably, in all of our years in Hollywood, these two seasons are definitely the most challenging. You know, we try to stay really true to just the events. We research like crazy, And at the same time, you know, we're not a documentary, so we have to kind of make things make sense and bring our audience on a journey with us. So we kind of stitch the events together and try and make a really enjoyable, you know, interesting and exciting ride for everyone who's watching.
Brian, why did you and Kelly and Ridley and everybody involved decide to make Anthrax the subject of this Hot Zone? And once you decided, okay, we're going forward with Anthrax as the subject, how do you structure the miniseries in such a way that it is entertaining and illuminating?
Wow, those are two big ones, right? No, I would say the reason we really chose Anthrax was because the first season was such a great story about character. You know, Rich and Preston's book highlighted Nancy Jacks and her husband and her team and in a really interesting, unique character story that happened to be about Ebola, but it wasn't exactly an Ebola story. It was a very human story. So we wanted something that was still very much in the same scientific vein, about a ticking clock and a situation that needed to be handled, and the heroes really who rose to the top were scientists. But really we were looking for character, and this story has so much character. Daniel Day-Kim's Matthew Riker was a fictional character that we created, kind of using so many different FBI agents who worked on the case over multiple years as inspiration. And Tony Goldwyn's character, Bruce, was a real person. And there are several people in the show that we try to pay homage to who were really a part of the investigation. I think that's your first question. Your second was, how do you do it?
how do you structure it?
And I mean, we had so many researchers helping us. And again, what we did is we tried to find, you know, at the end of the day, this is kind of a story about letters. And so one might ask, well, how do you make that compelling visually? And so we really looked for what would not only emotionally stand out as the emotional story of the characters, but also what visually would you know, be interesting for an audience to watch on screen that is different than something they could just watch, like Kelly said, in a documentary or read in books or, you know, or online. And so that we kind of started there and then created the episodes based on the emotional arcs and kind of the set pieces of what each, you'll notice each single episode is very much its own entity about a particular event in the investigation.
And we have a great
Kelly,
writing staff. I should also throw out.
And Brian wanted to, go ahead, Kelly. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say we had Jeff, some great writers, Jeff and Mac and Catherine, and then we had Tim and Thomas, and then we had researcher. I mean, we had like a group of people who all came in, all went off and read different articles, different books, and helped, you know, create this huge monster of information, and then really sat with us. You know, in a room with a bunch of whiteboards, and we just tried to have, we had to peel things back more and more to get a direct, you know, storyline. So it took, it was a lot of people and a lot of hours and a lot of research and a lot of thinking.
And Kelly, at what point did you and your writers sort of have the aha moment? We've got what we want to say nailed. Now it's a question of making sure the actors do their thing, our crew does their thing. And
I mean, honestly, there's like a million little aha moments because it's such an ongoing process. I mean, especially with something like this where you've got research and you're dealing with people who are real, in which case you are just trying to really get, stick to the facts. And then you're having to also, you know, create a little story in between and some new characters to kind of, as Brian was saying, an amalgamation of other people. So, I mean, there's a million little aha moments, but literally you're writing, rewriting, like, up until shooting a lot of times because of all the different factors, because it's such a complicated story. So I can't say there was one aha moment on a project that took a good year to get everything nailed down.
Mm-hmm. And Brian, when you decided to go forward with this, you know, when you do a miniseries of this nature dealing with facts, there's like different approach you can take. You can take like the documentary style format that, you know, has been done so many times, and also with regular TV shows like Dragnet, which sort of had like the documentary, like, you know, this happens, it's the Law and Order kind of approach. Or you can do it sort of in a more dramatic, as you said, bring like the characters are conglomerations of different people, but they all are sort of under the – they're all going after the same goal, which is to try to deal, like, find out what is this anthrax situation all about and how do we stop it?
You know, we actually really took the direction from the National Geographic team because, you know, they are such a respected institution that if they wanted to do a documentary, they have so many resources to actually do the legitimate documentary. And the decision was made to make this a narrative-driving, you know, edge-of-your-seat thriller like last year. So with both seasons, the decision was made early on to very much inspire the story on events that happened and on people that happened. And so that was kind of, that kind of happened really early on tonally in the conversation as a huge, huge conversation with National Geographic.
You are hearing Kelly Souders and Brian Peterson, the executive producers and showrunners of The Hot Zone, Anthrax, co-starring Daniel Day Kim and Tony Goldwyn. Three-night miniseries begins this Sunday night, 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time on National Geographic, available on cable and satellite all over the U.S. of A. Kelly joins us live from Los Angeles. Brian joins us from Vancouver, Washington, this half hour on this pre-Thanksgiving Day 2021 edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Sam Lamb, I'm with you from the other side of the U.S. of A, New York, 44 degrees top of the hour. We're expecting 54 degrees or maybe a little degree or two higher when the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade rolls around tomorrow morning. If you have a question or comment for Kelly and or Brian, make the call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. You just came in late, no chat room today. Guess they just decided to take the chat room. Gremlin decided to take the day off and get their Thanksgiving weekend going a little early. One thing I can tell you is we have a very big Monday edition coming your way. Another triple header week, by the way, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Special two-hour edition, and we've got something for everybody. First up, Greg Kahn. He is the president and chief executive officer of what was the Internet Things Consortium, now the Emerging Tech Exchange. We'll talk about where TV is going in new directions, interactive, metaverse, et cetera, in 2022 and beyond. And then for all you iconic TV fans out there, we got a good one for you. Kathy Garber, Sissy on Family Affair, which is now 55 years old as of this fall. She'll be with us. We'll talk about her becoming sort of the keeper of the flame of Family Affair, her time since the series, and the brand-new book she's just come out with, marking the 55th anniversary. And that's just our first hour. Second hour, we'll introduce you to the executive producers of the new Spectrum Original series that premieres next month called Joe Pickett, based on the best-selling books. We've got the executive producers, John Eric Dowdle and Drew Dowdle, and C.J. Fox, the author of the best-selling book. He's also an executive producer. And finally, and boy, do we have a finale for you, from Netflix's Lost in Space, going into its third and final season 1 week from today, we will have executive producer, creator, and showrunner Zach Estrin. That is all coming up Monday, big two-hour edition to wrap up November on Tomorrow Be Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Spread the word. Don't miss it. And everybody, by the way, will take your phone calls, and hopefully our chat room will be come back into operation by then. Kelly, Daniel Day Kim in the Media Village column that came out this morning along with your comments said that he had talked to at least three scientists dealing with anthrax, two of them Asian Americans. What did he and Tony Goldwyn get from their conversations to help develop their characters as a conglomeration of not just one doctor but several?
Well, both of those actors are incredibly professional and dedicated. We didn't know either of them. We hadn't worked with them before. And so we were both blown away by how much, even in our first conversations, they had done research. They had talked to people. They had really sat down and analyzed their characters, the story. They kind of go to every length to make sure that they're doing the best they can to portray their characters in a very honest, compassionate, an authentic way. And so both of, you know, I think all of us, I mean, we were talking, all of us were talking with different people throughout the process. So we would all get together and sort of bring little pieces. You know, it's another reason why we just kept rewriting. I mean, we have the sort of policy that we keep things open so that if something interesting comes along, we aren't shut off to it. And so I think all of us got to bring just little tidbits that we were learning along the way. And it was it was really delightful to work with both of them. They're so collaborative. They really, really want to do the best work that they can for the show, and it shows up on screen, which is just, I mean, the most exciting thing you can ask for as a showrunner.
Yeah. Brian, what pains did you and your production crew take to recreate the times?
Well, like the last season, we really, really worked with, you know, our props, our property master and our set deck and our production designer. We brought this a production designer who worked on the first season and just talked so much and asked for pictures and had them scope things out. And it's interesting because from what we read about Bruce, he kind of had a little nostalgia from the past. So parts of his life seemed to dive a little deeper back and not seem exactly period appropriate, which the audience might notice, but that was because of his character and who he was. And, you know, I was like a dog with a bone trying to get some Palm Pilots and some Blackberries in there. But what's difficult is they're very difficult to program at this point to actually get the readouts correctly. So we tried to do due diligence. Definitely our transpo got some great cars, and you'll notice little winks. Like at the time after 9/11, one of the things I remember most viscerally is everybody had those little car flags on their cars. The sense of coming together and nationalism was so strong that, you know, people have those little plastic car flags on their cars. And so in certain places, we've even tried to go to lengths to have that kind of sense of texture to the show.
And I think even like hair and makeup and wardrobe really made, you know, they're very subtle. All of them were so talented that you're not really that conscious of it. But if you look across the board, they kind of seamlessly made all of our actors blend in with the sets as far as time, as the time period.
Mm-hmm. Do either of you find it ironic, if in fact this was the case, that you were producing this miniseries about a national health crisis in the midst of a pandemic, another national health crisis?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of eerie similarities just in that, you know, there's misinformation. You know, sometimes people don't take a moment to pause and really think things through as to whether or not what they're, you know, hearing is necessarily the case. I know that was one of the things, and also just science, whether or not people want to act like, you know, they're, you know, sort of the villains or the heroes. We, you know, in working with them, there's no doubt in our minds they're always the heroes, very selfless group of people. I don't know, Brian, what you were going to say.
No, just that, you know, what's interesting is I think all six of the episodes had basically been broken by the time, you know, the whole industry took a couple months off to figure out how to shoot during COVID. So what's interesting is if you watch the episodes now, knowing that we came up with all that and all those lines before, especially the first few episodes before COVID, but certainly before there was any vaccine, it is very bizarre to watch because there's discussion about the anthrax vaccine really briefly. And that in retrospect is very interesting, given the fact that we came up with all that before we even knew that there would be a vaccine for COVID.
Yeah.
Kelly, given the fact that you have a lot of power player executive producers along with you, Ridley Scott, David Zucker, Jordan Sheehan, Linda Oakes, Richard Preston, what kind of, as you two were putting this miniseries together, what kind of input were you getting from people like Ridley Scott and Linda and David and so forth?
Well, I mean, everybody's just been really supportive. I think what's most important is that we're working with people who all care about what shows up on screen, that is the end game. That's the goal. And when that's the case, it makes life a lot easier. You know, I think everyone involved, those are all people who are at the level that they're at for a reason, and it's because they care about quality. So that, I think that in that retrospect, you know, we're just extremely lucky when we look back and we had partners that, you know, every step of the way, not everybody has the same opinions. We all have different tastes. Brian and I have different tastes. You know, we all have different ideas of how something should be executed. At the end of the day, all we care about is that what ends up on screen is the best job that any of us could do. So, you know, that's the kind, I mean, that makes you very lucky to have such partners.
Mm-hmm. The program is The Hot Zone Atlanta, And it's going to be coming your way, as again, we told you, with Daniel Dae Kim, Tony Goldwyn, the lead actors. It's coming your way Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on National Geographic, available on cable and satellite all over the place. We're speaking with the two executive producers and showrunner behind the project, and that is Kelly Saunders, joining us from Los Angeles, Brian Peterson from Vancouver, Washington, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. They're here, and we want to hear from you, too, in our remaining minutes with them. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. We will have another special edition of Tomorrow Be Televised 1 week from today. And joining us will be the former head of Ride TV, the All About Horses network that folded shop a couple of months ago and taken over by GAC Family and GAC Living. Well, what's happened to the person who ran that service, Michael Fletcher? Well, he just joined yesterday at Earth TV, which is an environmental organization that's also doing an environmental network that's available on smart TV sets and smart devices called EarthX TV. And Michael Fletcher is out to make that service the Netflix of that kind of television, entertaining and illuminating. You'll hear from Michael Fletcher, the new president, the president of EarthX TV and co-chief executive officer of EarthX. He'll be with us 1 week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Again, we'll have another triple header for you, kicking out November, kicking in December. It's November 29th, that's a Monday, then next Wednesday, December 1st, and December 3rd. So it's all 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. And stay tuned our next half hour. In addition to our guests, we've got our classic trivia question coming your way, four prizes in play, and they could be yours with the correct answer. So stay tuned for that. Brian, how did you and Kelly get together? Is this your first time teaming up, or have you done it before?
You know, we actually went to film school, and after that we were each working on independent features, and Kelly just got approached by someone who wanted to make a movie, and she suggested me as the writer, actually, because there was a lot of gay content in it. And then after that, I asked her to come in, and we worked on something that we had been developing because we're both kind of from the sticks, and we both have some similar backgrounds, not being very urban. And so we went and pitched a show, and before you knew it, we had sold the pilot, and unbeknownst to the two of us, we're actually a writing team. People kept telling us we were a writing team, and we kept looking at each other and saying, do you remember agreeing to that? But it's worked out fantastically for almost 20 years now. It's just been fantastic. Yeah.
And over that those 2 decades, Kelly, how do you and Brian work together? Do you have like sort of a game plan that you pretty much stick to, or are you working, depending on the project, to be flexible?
Well, I mean, I have to say before the pandemic, we had kind of a similar or like a kind of constant way of approaching things. But I got to say with the pandemic and not being in writers' rooms, in person, it's been a little bit trickier. But, you know, it's developed over the years and it kind of depends on the project. I mean, we're unusual in that we kind of don't write together very often. We're not in the same production meetings and that sort of thing very often. So we sort of conquer and divide, or I should say divide and conquer, but maybe it is conquer and divide. We kind of, some shows demand that the characters be the things that you deal with first. Some shows, it's all about getting the structure together first. It really, the material is really what drives it. You got to kind of have the confidence and the experience to just sit back and let the material tell you where to start.
Speaking of the material, Brian, with this case, with the Hot Zone, did you give any marching orders to your writing team in terms of, you know, you do this hour, you do that hour, you know, try to make sure that you're working together in terms of achieving continuity? How did you work with your writing team and your director, Daniel Percival, by the way, to achieve what you did?
I think it's no secret in the industry that Kelly and I are pretty hands-on, and so we had kind of pre-broken what we thought the episodes would be and done a lot of work beforehand before any of the writers came in. And really were upfront about that. And they were fantastic about digging in. And it also helped because then they each could research a particular thing. They weren't all kind of covering this, all trying to cover the entire scope of the investigation. So it really helped that we kind of had like experts in what happened in DC, experts in what happened in New York. And, when Dan came on to direct, he was so lovely, so open, to collaboration and understanding that we had a really clear vision that we'd pitched and we'd been driving toward. And he took that and he really elevated that, which was wonderful. And he directed the first and the last episode, so he kind of got the bookend of the show.
Mm-hmm. Was there, by the way, a moment for either of you, either in researching this or filming this, that you thought to yourself, we've got to. It's such a revelation that we've got to make sure this gets to viewers, that this, don't cut this. Don't, you know, at the film, is we must get this scene or this moment or this information to viewers because they don't know about this, and this will make all the difference in them understanding what we all went through with anthrax.
Well, I mean, for me, like, I just could not believe the extent to which the FBI had to go to try and get any information on this. I mean, they really had almost nothing to go on. And so they did some extreme, like, out-of-the-box, I would have never thought of that, investigative work to just come up with, you know, something to go on. And it took, as we said, you know, years and so many different FBI agents, millions and millions of dollars. But, you know, I think the other thing, I mean, show-wise, was making sure that, you know, Daniel and Tony don't cross until episodes 5 and 6 because it's kind of gearing up on both sides of the story. But those are scenes that, you know, we talked about the writers, you know, did work on them, you know, wrote parts of them. Certainly we all talked about what would be in those scenes. And those are the two scenes that we protected like crazy. One of them's kind of a lengthy scene that is kind of rare to be able to do in television. But the dynamic between both of those characters is fascinating. They're both incredibly smart, very compassionate, and the way they kind of understand each other instantly is really fascinating. And I think those were two scenes that we just fought like crazy to make sure that every moment in them stayed on screen.
Brian, anything for you?
It's funny, I was going to piggyback on that because, in fact, we had about almost half an episode on tracking mail and reprinting envelopes, and it's a fascinating, but it's one of those things that Kelly and I were just like, how in the world did the FBI have this amount of patience and this amount of tenacity? But, you know, understandably, some of our partners were like, guys, you know, a half an hour on printing envelopes, it's pushing the limit on what we can expect from our audience, which is understandable. So, but it really is truly interesting, you know, and I think for the people that like to tune into these kinds of investigations, they will really appreciate that verisimilitude and the finite detail that they got into that we now kind of barely touch on, but it's in there. We got it in.
Well, we're almost ready to turn the page from 2021 to 2022. What's next in terms of TV projects for both of you?
Oh, gosh. We're like in the beginning stages of quite a few things, so we'll see, but you know, we'd love to do a season 3. That would be a blast, and certainly have some thoughts on that. But we're all just trying to get through getting this up and on the air before we can even stop for a few minutes and sit down and discuss.
Mm-hmm. And trying to take a little break and get back to our roots, you know, some kind of epic fantasy stuff and some comedies, you know, pieces of comedy that we're trying to get out there. It just would be nice to kind of, you know, have a little breather before we get into another very, very tense thriller.
You can find The Hot Zone, Atlanta, on National Geographic this Sunday night. 3-night miniseries, and it kicks off this Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time, co-starring Daniel Dae Kim and Tony Goldwyn. Don't forget, check your local listings for where Nat Geo is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the promo online, go to nationalgeographic.com. That's nationalgeographic.com. And if you want to know more about the making of the series, check out MediaVillage.com today. Brand new column just published on MediaVillage.com. That's the media leadership website, which I write columns for. That's www.MediaVillage.com. Kelly Saunders, Brian Peterson, thank you both very much for joining us. Great luck with the miniseries this Sunday night. Hopefully more from The Hot Zone in the years to come. And to both of you and your crew and cast, have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You as well.
Thanks, Simon. You too.
Will do, Kelly and Brian. All the greatest. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye.
Kelly Saunders and Brian Peterson joining us live from Los Angeles and Vancouver, Washington, respectively. More tomorrow will be televised coming away, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. All you Outlander fans out there on Stars, guess what? There's a brand new audiobook from Outlander's creator, author Diane Galbathorpe. The name of it's called Go Tell the Bees That I Am Gone. That's Go Tell the Bees That I Am Gone, and that audiobook can be yours today if you go for a trial run with Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information, and they've got over 250,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, a one-month trial to hear Audible, plus you get great customer service from their parent, Amazon.com, and while the supply lasts, important health and wellness information that can make a difference for you or someone you know. If you're an Amazon Prime customer, you got better news coming your way. You get two audiobooks for your trial of one if you decide to do so. And if you decide to go right ahead and subscribe for the next few days only, that's the next few days only, you can get a subscription for under $6 a month and a $20 credit toward your subscription. So for all details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Remember, with the holiday season fast approaching, audible.com makes a great gift for you or someone you love. When we come back, we're going live to Atlanta, and you'll meet one of the co-stars of The Walton's Homecoming. That's the CW's first movie in its existence, and it premieres this Sunday night. And we've got the person who plays Grandpa Walton. His name is Alpha Trivette. You'll meet him after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunein.com. You've got to reach over 65 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, BTR, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio have got wonderful Thanksgiving programming all weekend long. When it comes to BTR, check out tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, the Yum Radio Thanksgiving Show. That's the Yum Radio Thanksgiving Show tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. But check out BTR, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio to have great Thanksgiving programming for you and your family throughout the entire weekend. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this pre-Thanksgiving Day 2021. Time to have fun with you live from Nueva York, 44 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our next guest, make that phone ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number good anywhere. Catch us the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. No chat room today. And stay tuned. Classic trivia question time coming up before the top of the hour, and it could be your chance to win four prizes in play, the most we've ever offered in one shot. Earlier in the week, Monday to be specific, we brought you Marcel LeBlanc. She plays Mary Ellen in The Walton's Homecoming. That's the first movie in the history of the CW's existence, and of course it brings back the great characters from one of the classic television series of all time, The Waltons, which 50 years ago started as a made-for-TV movie called The Homecoming, A Christmas Story. Well, we're delighted that by popular demand, we have another one of the co-stars. This one plays the role of Grandpa Walton, the role made famous in the series by Emmy Award winner Will Gear. Joining us live from Atlanta in an internet radio exclusive, Alpha Trivette. Alpha, thank you for coming on, and very happy Thanksgiving to you down in Atlanta. And for some reason, we are not getting through. Alpha, give us a call back immediately, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. As soon as I see you're back on our computer screen, we'll get you on. In the meantime, let's do the classic trivia question of the week. We have four big prizes in play. We've got two books. That's the unofficial Hocus Pocus cookbook. Bette Midler was in the original movie back in the 1990s. It's coming back next year as a Disney Plus feature. And also, we've got the Betty White book, 100 Mark Moments in Extraordinary Life, a Brief Brothers t-shirt from the popular new 2B television series, and we have Loud House crayons from Nickelodeon. Here's the question. Gil Faber was the lead character in what iconic CBS television series? Gil Faber was the lead character in what iconic TV series on CBS? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First, with your answer, you win all four prizes. If you don't get a winner by the end today, we will post the question Thanksgiving morning. That's tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, play it in. All the very best. And if we have time before the top of the hour, we'll repeat the question. Now, with us from Atlanta, the person who's playing Grandpa Walton this Sunday night on The Walton's Homecoming on the CW, we welcome in Alpha Trivette. Alpha, welcome and happy Thanksgiving to you and your clan.
Hey, Simon, thank you. Sorry I wasn't there the first time. I called back, though. Here I am. You got me, right? Well,
Yep, you are coming through loud and clear. And your city had a screening of the movie a few days ago. How did it turn out?
Yeah, we got to see it on Saturday. It turned out great. By the way, I know the answer to that question. Anyway, back to the screening. A lot of fun. Most of the kids were there, and a lot of the cast, a lot of the crew were able to see it for the first time. And I think everybody who watches on Sunday is going to be pleased, especially Walton's fans, you know, like you, Simon. You said you watched it as a kid. It was one of your favorites, as it was mine, because I was growing up in Virginia, and it was a show about Virginia, and there weren't any of those on at the time. And so it was very special to me. But the screening went very well.
When we talked to Marcel on Monday, she mentioned she had the opportunity to meet Judy Norton, the woman who played Mary Ellen in the
yep.
original series. You're playing the character that Will Gear played. He is no longer with us. When did you have a chance to see episodes with Will, who won an Emmy Award for the role? And if so, what was your impression about it, and what was the essence of his character you wanted to bring to your portrayal?
Yeah, of course. I watched episodes of Walton's when I was younger. And I'm honored to be mentioned in the same company as Will Gear, who was in the TV series, and Edgar Bergen, who starred in the movie. I mean, what an iconic pair that is, and to have my name mentioned in that same sentence is awesome. Will Gear and Grandpa Walton was a very familiar person to me because, you know, I grew up in rural Virginia. Both my grandfathers lived into their 90s and both farmed, and my parents went through the Great Depression, as had my grandparents. And there were a lot of traits that they carried through because of that, because they realized and recognized hard times and kind of lived their lives in preparation to make sure that didn't happen again, you know, that they wouldn't be caught without ever again. And I think a real sweet part of the movie that you'll see is the exchange of Christmas presents and the simplicity of the presents they gave each other. And with that simplicity came a deep appreciation for the meaning of the gift. And I think in the situation we're in this country right now and in the world, people are longing for that kind of simplicity. And I would hope that when you watch that this Sunday, that people will recognize, you know, how sincere that was and how that meant so much more than, you know, a tree filled with presents and all the commercialization that's come along with Christmas these days.
Before he did the Waltons, Will Gear was sort of a journeyman actor through episodic television. And he became known for playing a lot of roles that were strong-willed, gruff, whether it was hero or villain. And when Gil did the Waltons, he brought all of that to the character of Grandpa, but he also brought a sweetness and a tenderness, especially when he had his scenes with the late, great Grandma Walton, played by Ellen Corby, who also won an Emmy Award for the role. Did you try to tap into that with the person who plays Grandma in this film?
Yeah, Rebecca Coons plays Grandma, and she is fantastic. And I think both of us tried to capture that. There is a bit of crustiness to us, and that comes with old age and experience and having to work. But you're absolutely right about the sweetness and depth of Grandpa Walton, because in a scene in Homecoming, he takes Mary Ellen and John Boy on a journey. They're walking to go cut down a Christmas tree, and on the way they stop by the family cemetery, and Grandpa Walton explains to Mary Ellen the importance of that these are all her family members, that this is her history. And then he relates a bit of the story of Walton Mountain, and that speaks to the notion that Grandpa Walton is not only And he tells Mary Ellen, no matter where you go in this world, you'll always be a Walton. And he gets emotional by telling her that. And that speaks to Grandpa's depth, you know, and the sweetness that you talk about, because he is in touch with the history and part of the land there on Walton Mountain. But he understands by telling Mary Ellen that she may not always be there, you know, that she will go places in the world that none of the other Waltons may have gone. And so there's that crustiness about him because he's been there, he's done that, he's worked hard, he's struggled to make sure that the family stayed together. And there's also the tenderness and gentleness that he imparts to the grandchildren. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, he's a very deep character that's much more than the crusty exterior. He's in tune with the love and development of the family and how they are a part of the mountain.
And also Edgar Bergen, who you mentioned, who played the original Grandpa Walton in The Homecoming of Christmas Story, the movie that got the Waltons going a year later on CBS,
right.
Same situation. And what's made it amazing is that very few people knew that Bergen, who was one of the great ventriloquists with Charlie McCarthy and Laura Stern and so forth in so many different
right.
ways, film, TV, and so forth, that he could act and bring that crust. In fact, the two, Will Gear and Edgar Bergen, look very much alike. I could see why Gear was picked for the series.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very sweet story that Lev Spiro told me. He's the director. That apparently they were a bit concerned because I wasn't tall like Will Gear. And Lev said, well, I don't care. He's the actor I want. And if you're telling me I can't have my actor, then we're going to have a problem. So, you know, I hope what I can bring to the new Grandpa Walton is that same sincerity and sweetness. And I don't know, because to me, Grandpa Walton was a bit of a rascal, too. I mean, there were times when he would say things that, you know, back then you wouldn't pay much attention to. But now, as I've watched episodes over again, I go, ooh, well, that's kind of racy there, Grandpa. Way to go. And then we find out also that John, according to Olivia, that her parents didn't want her to marry John, that they actually ran off and got married. So apparently John was raised sort of in the same mold and was a bit of a rascal, a bit of a charmer, but at the same time he knew how to work and get things done. And his basic motivation is to care the family, as we see that he has to travel 90 miles away from home and only travel back on weekends, you know, because the mills had shut down and the only work he could find was away in Lynchburg. Or Waynesboro, I think. Yeah, Waynesboro.
You're hearing Alfred Trivet. He plays Grandpa Walton on The Walton's Homecoming. That is the new CW made-for-TV movie, the first one in that network's 15-year existence. And it premieres this Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. CW available, of course, on local TV stations all over the country, including WPIX-TV, Channel 11, here in New Weber York. Alfred joins us live from Atlanta, Georgia, this half hour on this pre-Thanksgiving 2021 edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom and Alfred, I'm with you up the coast from where Alpha is in New Weber York, 44 degrees atop the island. Question or comment for Alpha, make that call. We want to hear you. 646-652-2906. In case you came in late, no chat room today. Unfortunately, they decided to take a holiday off, the folks who run the room. But hopefully they'll be back with us on Monday when we have our next episode, big two-hour edition for you, coming on the program from the Emerging Tech Exchange, formerly Internet Things Consortium, President and Chief Executive of the Great Con. And then the co-star of Family Affair. She played Sissy on that popular CBS sitcom. Kathy Garber will be with us in an Internet Radio exclusive. She has a brand new book out marking the 55th anniversary of the start of that series back in 1966. Then from the new Spectrum Original series, Joe Pickett, we'll have executive producers John Eric Dowdle, Drew Dowdle, and the author of the popular Joe Pickett books that the series is based on, DJ Box. And finally, from Netflix's Lost in Space, going into its third and final season, 1 week from today, creator, executive producer, and showrunner Zach Eskrin, and another Internet Radio exclusive. All coming your way Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Be with us. Spread the word, too. It's all here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And the first of three episodes next week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Rounding out November and bringing in December with a bang. Alpha, how did you get the role of Grandpa Walton?
Well, I, like all actors, you know, you're called by, or you're contacted by your agent and said, there's this role, and I want to submit you. So we are then submitted to the casting director, and the casting director says yes. And so they send the sides, the sides, which are, for those who don't know about acting, sides are just a piece of the script that have maybe one scene or a part of a scene, sometimes multiple scenes that you put on tape that you record with a reader and then submit. And then the next step is it goes to the casting director, and if the casting director likes it and picks you above everybody else, they send it on to the directors, and then the directors and producers get final say-so in it. So I was honored, to even submit for it. And it was a long time before I actually heard back from it. So I contacted my agent and then said, have you heard anything from this? Because at first I said, well, okay, it's just another audition. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was going, I really want to be Grandpa Walton. And Simon, it's nothing I ever thought as a younger actor I would ever say. I would never have looked in the mirror and go, one day I'm going to be Grandpa Walton. But now, I'm going, wow, that's very cool. I'm going to be Grandpa Walton for the very reasons I mentioned before, to be in the same conversation with Edgar Bergen and Will Gere. And so I really, really wanted it. And then when they finally called me, as my agent often does, when I answer, they go, hey, Grandpa. And so then that was it. And we went to work, and we're shot here in Georgia, as they do a lot of Christmas movies, shoot in spring and summer. So, we got fake snow on the ground, and we're all bundled up and acting like we're shivering cold. But yeah, that's how it came about. And I just feel so honored to be a part of this cast.
And Alva, what's been your road along the acting trail? When did you get started, and what sort of triumphs and craziness have you had in your road?
Well, I guess I realized later on in life that I really had always wanted to be an actor or a performer of some sort. I was state and national president of Future Farmers of America, and I had a great opportunity to travel and speak and represent the United States. I even traveled some internationally in that regard. I went to Virginia Tech, got a degree in agricultural economics, worked for Virginia Farm Bureau in Richmond, and then became director of public relations for the Kentucky Association of Electric Cooperatives in Louisville. There I started doing some little theater. I contacted an agent, got an agent, booked a few commercials. I started doing stand-up comedy, and I had a friend who was booking, Tom Sobel, who was booking some rooms. And then I got a chance to go on the road with a Nashville country music act, and I said, screw this, I'm leaving this corporate job, and I'm going to be a stand-up comic. So I did that for a couple of years, and I was headlining a room in Charlotte, North Carolina. A guy named Jack Murphy, who was doing the Q Morning Zoo there in Charlotte, said came to me and said, would you like to do radio? I went, yeah, sure. And so that started a 25-year career in morning radio. Took me from one coast to the other. While I was in North Carolina, I got my first network movie. It was A Time to Triumph with Patty Duke. And then gradually I drifted away from both acting and comedy. Did strictly radio, and then I left radio here in Atlanta. I said, well, what do I want to do? Well, I love acting, so I started with acting classes at the Alliance Theater. After a couple of years, I got booked. I had a recurring role in a TV show called Banshee, which was on Cinemax. I played an Amish elder, Israel Proctor. American Made with Tom Cruise. I'm currently recurring in a show called Games People Play on BET. Had what may be a recurring role, I'm not sure, in Our Kind of People on Fox. And in Johnson, which is on Bounce TV. And then hopefully the Waltons will turn into a series. We've all got our fingers crossed for that.
I know Sam, the executive producer, when the CW had a virtual press event, sort of suggested that if the film works Sunday, gets great viewership, that it might either become a series of made-for-TV movies as Lifetime's Highway to Heaven has just started to do, or it may become a series. And I think there are a lot of fans who would like to, either way, make it happen.
And Sam is such a great guy, and he's had some tremendous success with the Dolly Parton special, and then he did her Heartstrings series. And Lev Spiro was a director on one of those called These Old Bones, and Jim Strain, who's the writer for The Waltons Homecoming, was a writer for that. And oddly enough, I auditioned and did a callback for a role in that, and I believe Lev was there at that callback audition, and I think maybe possibly he remembered me for that, and that might have been another reason that I got cast.
Yeah. Incidentally, Jonathan Tropper, the creator of Banshee and Warrior, was on our show several times. He's a marvelous talent. And also, we just had a few months ago the creator and director on Johnson, which, by the way, has gotten a second season. Desiree Ray, who's absolutely marvelous, super talent. And we had it as a show to know. And I've said to a lot of people, I think this is one of the sleeper, Johnson's one of the sleeper shows of 2021. And I'm thrilled that Bounce TV is getting the second season.
And he's such a great guy, and that whole cast is just so much fun. And, of course, my character, as has tended to be, in fact, in the three shows that I've had recurring roles, I'm, not a nice guy, I'll put it that way. So it's fun to play those kind of villain-type roles, and I've got one for sure in Johnson. And it looks as though we'll be going back for season. I mean, I know they will, and whether they'll bring me back or not, which I would welcome that. We'll see how that goes. And in two shows I'm in, I play owner of a professional basketball team. It's kind of weird. I play one on one coast in Los Angeles and one in Boston. So I don't know if I'm getting typecast as jerk rich guys or not.
Does having a name like Alpha get you in the door?
Well, I don't think it hurts, and I love having an unusual name, and people compliment me on the name all the time. It comes from my grandfather, who was the firstborn in his family, and his name was Alpha. That was my mother's dad. He named his firstborn son that, and my uncle died a month before I was born, so I got his, I became Alpha. It's kind of memorable. I mean, I suspect I'm the only Alpha Trevette in the whole world. So, I mean, that's a bit of a distinction as well. I don't know if it gets me in the door, but it certainly makes people go, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. So it does help in that regard, because this is a kind of business where being remembered really does help, especially if you're being remembered for making a good impression. And hopefully that's what I'm able to do when I go in for auditions or when I meet people. And so, I think it does help.
When I asked Richard Thomas at that virtual press event about why the Waltons defied the odds at the time and became a long-running show on CBS, when it was up against the Mod Squad, when it was up against the Flip Wilson Show, both great programs, produced by Laura Marr, a production company nobody ever heard of before, what Lee Rich and Robert Jackson really did with that company, he said that there was something in the show that could relate to anybody watching it, whether you were young or old or in the middle. What do you hope people will get from this movie that you think stands out about why The Waltons was the great success critically and with viewers that it did, that it was?
Well, I think anybody can relate to the family aspect of it. There's all the little conflicts that occur between siblings. There's the issues that parents and grandparents have to deal with. There's in the Waltons, there's an element of struggle and having to work together, having to come together as a family unit, but even more than that, to come together as a community. I hope that people will realize how important both of those things are, and probably getting more important as we go along. The value of, as you'll see when you watch Homecoming, of people helping each other out, but then also coming to understand each other a little better. because on Christmas Eve, which is, in this film is different from the original, the Walton kids attend a black church. And there's a real sweetness about that scene when they all are gathered together, or they're holding hands, they're singing Christmas songs, and it's so cool. Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis are in this, and they're singing, and that's a beautiful scene. What I hope from that makes us all realize that we're not as bad as we think we are, that we're actually closer and more appreciative of each other than a lot of people would like to like for us to believe. And if we rely on that sense of togetherness and closeness, then we can accomplish a great deal more to help out ourselves and our community. So there's an understanding of family and friends, and they will see, as with the series, that families go through all sorts of ups and downs. And you mentioned something about Grandpa Walton earlier about a sweetness in him, and there's a sweetness and an innocence in some of the relationships with John Boy and the woman who brings around the library books. And I hope that what that does, I mean, for people like me in my age, we're not that far removed from those sorts of things, when there actually had to be someone who came around and brought library books. In this case, it was a young woman who was riding a horse, and there was such an innocent and sweet relationship developing between her and John Boy. So now when relationships are not really based on depth and strength, I would hope that we would come to realize that we really need to get back to that sort of thing, that we need to be more innocent, that we need to be more caring and giving and reaching out to our friends and family.
Absolutely, Alpha. And I'll tell you, that's a great hope to realize. And maybe we can start with the movie coming on the CW this Sunday night. The Walton's Homecoming. We're about to hit the clock. That's why I sort of had to cut things off here. The Walton's Homecoming. Catch it this Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the CW. Check your local listings for the CW station area, including WPX here in New York. More details about the program online, CWTV.com. It's CWTV.com. It will also be played later on the CW's app and later hopefully on CWC, which is available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Again, The Walton's Homecoming, Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Alpha Trivette, thank you so much for coming aboard. Good luck not only with the movie Sunday night, but all your supporting roles on Johnson and Our Kind of People and so forth. And from all of us to you, you and your family have a fantastic Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Simon, and to you and everyone else too.
Thanks so much, Alpha. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Alpha Trivette joining us live from Atlanta. Thanks to all of our guests these last 3 days and all of you for tuning in. Remember, on Monday, we've got a great show, including Family Affair co-star Kathy Garver and Zach Estrin, the creator, executive producer, and showrunner of Lost in Space, beginning its third and final season on Netflix 1 week from today. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not only those of Block Talk Radio and other distributors of the program. Andy Cho is B-Char's general manager, Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. Website name is provided by Podsite, the Internet's new podcast destination. For more, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator, guitarist, Vegas. Tomorrow we televised is brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For Tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful Super Thanksgiving with you and those you love. Take time out over the Thanksgiving weekend to acknowledge the people in your life, who they are for you and you for them. It makes the whole weekend so much sweeter. Back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, you know where, Block Talk Radio, Speaker Chin Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.